Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 Podcast, First Impressions Edition. I am Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. The Colts have a very simple playoff scenario for next week against the Houston Texans. At some point, we'll find out what the schedule is and when this game will happen. I'm assuming it will be a placed in a window. Well, there's no point in saying that right now because it'll happen by the time people are listening to this. But it's got a good chance, I think, to be playing. It's a big game. It's a big game. And more importantly than that, the Colts cannot go to Jacksonville.
Not in the first game. But if both teams keep winning.
They can't go to Jacksonville. It's not going to happen. I don't have to go back.
Now it's
Nate's favorite scenario is finally dead.
Yeah, it sounds like it's either they could host a home playoff game if they win and beat the Texans, or they could.
Well, and if the Jaguars lose,
yeah, or they go on the road to likely either Kansas City or Buffalo. But they're in this spot because they handled the Raiders 23-20.
Yes, yeah, they beat the Raiders today. The score is really not indicative of the game, but it's a three point win. But they were pretty much in control of the game. Like that last touchdown, it theoretically gave the Raiders a chance, but they had to get an onside kick. They were out of timeouts. They were in miracle territory even before they scored the touchdown. So a game they were pretty much in control of. A nice bounce back from the Atlanta game. This is the second time that they've done this in the last month. If you think about the last month, it's been lose terribly to Cincinnati, blow out Pittsburgh, lose terribly in Atlanta, and then pretty in control win is the way I'll put it against the Las Vegas Raiders. I think one of the things about this game, we'll get into this in the categories, but just by way of introducing it, is this is another game with the Colts, with this story of this Colts team is just resilience in the face of losses. They didn't have Julian Blackman. They didn't have Kenny Moore in the secondary. That's not a recipe for good things against Devontae Adams. And Devontae Adams did have a big game, but a lot of it was kind of meaningless.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they made him, you know, he's a three-time first-team All-Pro. They made him earn all the yards he got, and it's a huge stat line. But truly, like, none of the plays were sort of back-breaking. And they were always chasing points. They were down double digits for a good amount of the second half. He scored his last touchdown, to pull it within 3 points, but on an amazing play. So it's like you saw flashes of what make him such a great player. But yeah, they were able to control the game script enough. On this really was just sort of a very weird sort of complimentary football game where there just weren't that many parts of the Colts that necessarily stood out as amazing, and yet they all kind of combined to have this sort of comfortable cushion lead over Aiden O'Connell and the Raiders, who just didn't have enough answers to come back. They were able to just by building this positive game script and from the opening drive on, were able to sort of survive the things that make the Raiders dangerous, which is Devontae Adams and Max Crosby. Whereas, you know, they kept Crosby fairly quiet. He had some moments that were good. And then Adams had the, you know, tremendous stat line, like I said, but they weren't, you just didn't feel the impact of it the way that you feared.
Well, that's a great way to segue into the categories. So let's start with the hero of the game. Nate, your hero of the game for the Colts 23-20 win over the Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm going to go with DeForest Buckner. Buckner had just the one sack. The Colts only had two sacks, but he had three quarterback hits, and he also, you know, he had a tackle for loss. Pretty much, he just kind of had that constant push in the middle of the line that both, you know, messing up the run game and getting in the face of Aiden O'Connell and just getting him out of some of those kind of early moments where they could have really exposed a Colts secondary that was going through it and really patchwork. It's the story I ended up writing for the Indy Star is about just some of the adjustments they had to make in the secondary where they have a free safety in Nick Cross making his first start of the year. They have strong safety in Ronnie Harrison, who hasn't played strong safety since last season in the NFL since he moved to linebacker. They had a nickel corner in Chris LeMons, who had never started a game at nickel. And the way to overcome that, as we've kind of talked all season, has been their pass rush, and specifically DeForest Buckner, to me, stood out the most is just the clear mismatch in the middle of that line. The weaknesses of the Raiders kind of sunk them, where it's kind of shaky pass protection and a backup quarterback who isn't very experienced. And I felt like DeForest Buckner best exposed those weaknesses by just sort of backing guards and interior linemen into the lap of Aiden O'Connell, harassing him, hitting him, and making it so that, you know, once he got his yards, O'Connell had almost, I think he had 299 yards. But again, like with Adams, you didn't feel the impact of it because it felt like they came late. It felt like they had to really earn every level of it. The drives took a while. They were able to get off the field a number of times. They kind of were a bend but don't break defense today, where a lot of times the Raiders got across midfield. Interesting decisions to punt it when they did and not go for it. But they were able to get them into fourth down like that. And I think, I'm guessing part of why the Raiders decided to punt as much as they did and not be as aggressive as I thought they would is that, you know, a lot of these calculations in short yardage were trying to figure out what to do with DeForest Buckner. So I think he got in the head of Aiden O'Connell and the Raiders coaching staff a little bit and was able to throw them enough out of their rhythm to really set the stage for the Colts to play from in front.
This is not my number of the day, but it's a good number anyway. DeForest Buckner now has 7 sacks on the season. Over the last 6 seasons, this was a good game note that the Colts found. Over the last 6 seasons, he's had at least 7 sacks in every one of those seasons. Only 2 other players in the entire NFL have done that over that span. And that is pretty remarkable when you think about the consistency, when you think about the fact that he plays inside. Now, one of the other players is interior player Chris Jones from the Chiefs, who's one of the best defensive tackles in the league as well. But you think about Buckner, all the stuff Buckner has played through in Indianapolis, all the injuries, everything he's faced. And the other thing is, like, with this pass rush, and I kind of wrote about this earlier this week, but it's important to say again, like, you've got, you know, breakout seasons from Ebukam and Odangbo, and Pay's had his career best season. And so you end up not talking necessarily as much about Buckner because we're just kind of used to Buckner. But he's still the straw that stirs the drink for them. He's the engine. And when he's as dominant as he was today, it makes it very, very hard on an offense. I thought their game plan coming out of the second half was pretty good in the first series there where they got the touchdown. But a lot of the reason it was good was because they were trying to stay away from the pass rush. And a lot of that was DeForest Buckner. My hero of the game, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is the second time in 3 weeks. Gardner Minshew.
Joel has been converted.
I have not.
2 times in 3 weeks is a pretty good.
I have not.
You're ignoring the evidence in your face.
I did not say that this is not a big picture evaluation of like his capabilities as a starting quarterback. But today, the play he made on the first drive, stepping up in the pocket, scrambling on the move, finding Josh Downs for 50 yards, and then the throw he made to Alec Pierce. Pierce was very open, but the pass rush, the zero blitz, was closing in. He had to stay in the pocket and make a throw, and that's the kind of play that he hasn't always handled pressure well. He hasn't always stepped into throws and made the throw when everything's bearing down on him. He did it today. Those two plays, really, and getting touchdowns on those drives, that ended up being really the difference in the game was the 14-3 lead they had at halftime. And then they were just able to hold on to it after the break. So, 15, again, not like an overall – it's not going to be an eye-popping stat line. You're not going to it's 15 of 24.
23.
15 of 23 for 224 yards and a touchdown. But that is almost 10 yards per attempt. We've talked over and over again about how yards per attempt is an issue with Minshew at quarterback. And it wasn't perfect. There were some missed receivers. When I say missed receivers, I mean there were wide open players he did not hit. Like Alec Pierce was very wide open on an early play. He should have hit him. But those two plays, I think if you look at their offensive game, were bigger than anything else that happened. So that's where he's going to go. He's going to go in the hero of the game category.
Yeah.
The missed receivers is already making me like regret that. But I still think those two plays and getting them out to the lead so they could hand the ball to the running game and salt away clock in the second half was the most important thing for the offense.
Yeah, I mean, this was Gardner playing the best version of Gardner's game, and that's, you know, we've talked to constantly on this podcast that there are limitations to him, and so there's going to be some mistakes within that. We saw that on the missed play to Alec Pierce. We saw it a couple times on his decisions to scramble and fall short of the first down and punt. But what I did like about Gardner was his ability and willingness to be aggressive, take shots, and protect the ball. And that has been the challenge for him this year, where there's been moments where he's been aggressive, like that Browns game, get some big plays going, but the turnovers really caught up to him. There's been other games where they've just really turtled up against, you know, teams like the Patriots and Panthers, where he didn't turn over, but he didn't really make plays either. Today was a mix of using the feet effectively, looking down the field, throwing down the field, and avoiding danger too. Only one sack and no turnovers. So all in all, I mean, this was the day that Gardner needed to have of just sort of getting the ball out, just get enough explosive plays and protect the ball. It's situations help, going up against Aiden O'Connell on the other sideline. That played into it. That's sort of the model that's had to kind of work this season for them and for him. But within the context of that, you know, he had a job to do, and I thought he did it pretty well.
That brings us to a category that's actually pretty hard today. Not usually in a 3-point game, but it's pretty difficult today. Villain of the game. Villain of the game is not easy today.
No, it is not. So the one I'm going to go with, again, is within context of they won this game and there are now clear villains.
I made Nate queasy again. So the category is making Nate queasy again.
The one moment where I thought they might let this slip was when EJ Speed committed the roughing the punter penalty. And the Raiders, who had absolutely no life on offense, went down and scored. And it went from a 14-3 game to a 14-10 game. And for a while, there stayed, you know, very much within that range when it got to 17-10. And then, you know, there's a point where it's 20-13. Like, that was keeping them within range of what I thought was the Raiders' one path to victory, which was either Davante Adams or Max Crosby doing something crazy and making up the deficit on kind of one play. And so that sequence of EJ Speed running into the punter opened the door for that. That was life in the second half that the Raiders weren't sure how they were going to find. Now, again, the context there is that, you know, it didn't end up costing them any more than, you know, a little, making the score a little closer, but it wasn't, you know, they still had to make the Raiders earn it the rest of the way out, and the Raiders couldn't do that. The play itself wasn't like overly, they've had more egregious special teams miscues this season. That was just kind of one that added to a season full of bad penalties from that group. But his was, you know, he came close to blocking it. So you can respect kind of the aggressiveness trying to make a play like that. But, you know, went a step too far, and that's, EJ Speed has had a very nice season, his best season yet. I think he's really grown into that linebacker role, become a full-time player, allowed them to move on from Shaquille Leonard. But there are, you know, there's room for every player to grow. And I think one area for him is still those occasional penalties in moments like that where he runs on such energy and athleticism, just learning to control that dial. And so that was one moment where he'll look to improve.
The linebackers in general have been hit or miss recently, and especially with some of the plays that people are making in the passing game to running backs. Zaire Franklin has not been the same player here for a little while. I think villain of the game probably Jalen Jones. Not that it was a terrible game from him. He had the pass interference, which I honestly think was a good call. He grabbed the guy's jersey and yanked on him. I was going to say the secondary as a whole, for some of the the easy throws they gave up. But Juju Brents also broke up three passes, including one in the end zone. That was a really, really nice play. So I didn't really want to do that. So I think it's a tough matchup. I think it's a tough matchup for the whole secondary. But on the one hand, the other thing, we'll get into the number of the game a little bit later, and it's going to be good for them. But I think just in the absence of really a whole lot of other people to pick, I think that's where I'd go with it. That brings us to a category that I think there's a ton of people for. It's a very hard one. Unsung hero of the game. I'm going to lead off on this one. Unsung hero of the game for me is going to be Braden Smith.
That's a good one.
Braden Smith has taken a lot of heat this year for being hurt, which, as I think most listeners of the podcast know, not my favorite thing that people do.
Nope.
And in talking to the players in the locker room, one of the things that kept coming out was he's really had to tough it out and he really had to play through some stuff. It's been a tough year for him. But he played today. Max Crosby had zero sacks. He had one quarterback hit. And in the second half, I thought specifically when the running game got going, if you watch the right side of the line, he really started to cave down some of that side of the line. And the difference between him and Blake Freeland is so huge at this point. And just having him in the lineup was a huge deal. That game does not go that way if Braden Smith doesn't find a way to play this week.
Yeah, I mean, that we talked constantly about how they have to find a way to keep Max Crosby from wrecking the game. And I just don't think they would have been able to do it without Braden Smith. Because at the very least, if it's not him and it's Blake Freeland, who is a rookie in a tough spot, he needs, like, he can't get the thing he needs to be able to handle a matchup like this, which is strength that's more than a rookie. It's similar to where, in some ways, Bernhard Raimann was in a year ago. You can't just manufacture that. So at the very least, I think they would not have been nearly as aggressive. I think they would have played pretty scared, which means that you take out a couple of those explosive plays to Downs and Pierce down the field.
There's a technical aspect, too. Like, if you think back to the Myles Garrett play in the end zone where he forced the fumble on Minshew, like, it was supposed to be, like, a chip and a double team, and it ended up being, like, sort of like one of those Steven Seagal movies where the tight end and Freeland kind of tried to make contact with Garrett at different times.
Oh, yeah.
And so it turned into two bad one-on-one blocks that Myles Garrett sort of laughed at. Like on the Pierce play specifically, because I wrote about this a little bit for the story's already on IndyStar.com. They have a double team on him. They have a double team on Crosby, and he can't go anywhere. And part of it is because neither one of them is lunging. Braden Smith's just sitting there waiting for Crosby to make a move. And Crosby's kind of sitting back, I think, hoping that the attention on him will allow the other blitzers to get home. But the technical piece of that, I think, is important, you know. And there's probably some of that. I know in talking to Will Fries today, Will Fries was just saying, like, it's really nice to have Smith back, just in terms of having him next to him, the way they play together, the chemistry, all that stuff. It kind of goes along with some of the stuff that Freeland's probably not good at as a rookie.
Yeah, just I think on the sheer kind of effort and strength and willpower it took for Braden to get through this game. We walked in the locker room, and he was just taking a moment by himself in a hallway, just, and you could just kind of see the toll of what this has done to, you know, a very large player who's not old, but he's in the prime of his career, and knee and hip, and those injuries are very tough on, you know, offensive linemen. And so to, you know, and it's not like he's just doing it's different than other positions. Like when Josh Downs had the knee issue, they could limit his role to just third downs. It's hard to do much of, like, to really insulate an offensive lineman that way, especially when his job's to go against Max Crosby. Like, you're signing up for hell, and that's what it was kind of all day for him on a physical toll level, but he was able to prevent it from looking that way, you know, in a football sense. And that really was, at the end of the day, that was their one route, or the one thing they had to do was keep Max Crosby from wrecking it. And so Braden Smith, you know, he was the guy to step in and do that. There's so many different guys you could throw out for,
yeah,
this.
Big unsung hero day.
Big unsung hero day. So I'm going to go ahead and take a chance to give a little props to Alec Pierce. That 58-yarder, you know, longest play in the game, and – you know, the explosive play that went all the way for the distance for a touchdown, and just a great route, just a post route where he just absolutely destroyed the Raiders secondary and took it to the house. You saw those are the things they drafted him for. You mentioned that play where he should have had another one where it was a coverage bust early in the game and Gardner didn't see him. So if you just hit that one, I mean, his stat line could have been like the Tennessee game or even possibly better.
He also had a big third down conversion wiped out by a hold.
That's true. He did. So the interesting thing is he only had one target officially, and it was that that was the play. But he averaged 58 yards a target. That's pretty dang good.
Yeah, you take it.
This is like Alex is just an interesting player, and that's why it's been tricky to discuss him. So because you have to really watch and understand in context. And so like last week when they did have Michael Pittman Jr., and they learned that so late in the week, and they tried on the fly to move Alec Pierce into the Michael Pittman Jr. role.
Kind of,
yes. But they did try some more things. They didn't have anybody to do a lot of the Pittman stuff. So he sort of adjusted, tried to do more, and he did not have a good game at all. And really nobody on the team did. But I think it is the last two games have been a clear example of how some players just fit certain roles a lot better than others. And for Pierce, his game is going to be this kind of thing where you have him very often fly down the field, run these deep posts, fade routes. He's not going to get a lot of targets, even with a quarterback who can take those chances, but especially with a backup quarterback. But in the moments where he does get that target, he's got he needs to deliver on that. It's a low volume role, but it's one where if you get one or two or three shots, you got to occasionally convert. And if you do that, even just once a game like this, for 58 yards and a touchdown, it is a dramatic effect because it's not only that 7 points and momentum swing and all that, but that starts to tell the defense a little bit of like, you do have to account for this. You do have to watch for this. And for a lot of weeks, it felt like you wonder, do they? Will they go enough to that? Can they hit that play? Can they convert? Can Gardner and Pierce get on the same page in order to make you respect that? If they can do this just enough, that will help some of the issues that we've seen form elsewhere with, some of the stacked boxes and the five-man fronts and things like that. It's going to be imperfect this year because they don't have stylistically the quarterback who will do this consistently. But that's why it's interesting to match up this unsung hero with your hero of the game. Like, they got on the same page today, at least for that one play, created the most explosive play in the game. And I don't know if they win today without that.
He's spent 2 years now essentially as a deep threat without quarterbacks who can throw a deep ball consistently. Mm-hmm. I think most people would be surprised to know he has 516 yards now this season.
Yeah.
He has 16.1 yards per catch. I think the 516 yards in particular is something that I think people would be surprised by. That brings us to, I don't even know if we have anybody for this one. Unsung villain. That's going to be a tough one. I'll go back to the linebackers. I think that if you on a play to play basis, for the most part, I think Zaire Franklin has kind of struggled lately.
Yeah, I think he was my unsung. It was one of those categories. I think maybe it was.
If you remember last week, if you remember last week's podcast, I'm very impressed.
That's true. I was driving.
Right. We walked out of the stadium and drove. If you remember what you said on that podcast.
Somehow I spit that out in the course of it.
A ton of credit for remembering that.
Yeah, I mean, today's hard to really come up with anything other than that. I like the Zaire Franklin one. I'm trying to think. There's got to be somebody I thought could have been a little bit more. Yeah, not in terms of villain, in terms of what I thought actually cost them in this game. I'm having a hard time with it, which is good. It's good that they don't have many villains contenders this week.
Number of the day. What's your number of the day?
My number of the day is 5, which is the number of 50-plus yard completions that Gardner Minshew has hit on the season. I saw Stephen Holder of ESPN first shared that stat, so I'll give him credit. But that number, 5 of those 50-plus yard completions, is second in the NFL, only behind Tua. That is kind of shocking for the way that we understand Gardner's style of play and abilities and the way that we've discussed him on this podcast. It makes me think we probably haven't quite given, today's a good day to make him the hero.
Right. We're still right. His yards per attempt on the season is 6.8.
Yeah. Well, today he got two of those five. So
yeah,
it was a deserved day for the hero for that reason. It's, I do think it goes to show something about how, give credit to the Colts coaching staff, Jim Bob Cooter and Shane Steichen, for finding ways to still take some shots where, you know, it became easy to, or tempting at one point to just turtle up and say, we're just going to run the ball and we don't have the quarterback to do some of this stuff. But they've realized that they can't just do that all the time. And so they've had to dial it up the right way. I think it's just come together in different ways where we talk about Alec Pierce's skill set is fit for this. Josh Downs today had a 50-yard catch. He's had two of those, a 59-yard and a 50-yarder. That's interesting to me because he's a rookie, and the fact that that was not what people understood him to be coming out of North Carolina. I remember Jim Bob Cooter saying they saw something in his college film that made them believe there was more to unpack there than had been unpacked yet as a deep receiver. So they're getting to some of these plays in their, you know, in unique ways that are, you know, that are, they have found ways to get some explosive plays. And I think that's been the challenge of the season is Anthony Richardson goes down, you lose the explosive athlete at quarterback. No Jelani Woods all season, you lose the explosive tight end. And then Jonathan Taylor has had such a weird year with injuries in the injuries and not playing early in the season to where, you know, he hasn't hit that either or been out there enough to do it. So props to them for finding some way to get the second most 50-plus yard completions behind Tua. It's a little bit of an unfair stat because Joe Flacco's just gotten started. So I'm sure he will shatter that in the next few weeks, but it's still impressive.
Number of the day for me is 5.8. 5.8 is the Raiders' yards per dropback, and I think that would surprise a lot of people. If you look at Davante Adams' stat line, he had 13 catches, 21 targets. There's a way to look at that where it feels like it's a really, really bad day for the defense. I think that the key to this defense today, consider, and this has maybe been a significant key to the season, is with what they had in the secondary today. Like, you got to think, they had two rookies at outside corner. They had a guy playing nickel who had played 32 snaps defensively in the last four seasons, including zero so far this season. Their safeties were primarily Nick Cross, who just has been moved around a lot and just got in the lineup, and Ronnie Harrison, who's been playing linebacker for most of the season. That was their secondary today for the most part. Expecting them to pitch a shutout on Davante Adams, I'm sorry. I don't know what coverage you think you're going to call. I don't know what thing you think you're going to do against Davante Adams. Is probably, I actually thought he kind of in the middle of the game had some focus issues with drops and stuff like that. But he's probably the premier technician in the game. Like a young inexperienced secondary like that is like a dream come true for him. And yes, he had 13 catches, but for less than 10 yards per catch. They never hit the big one. They never had the explosive play like the two we just described from Gardner Minshew. That's why these two numbers today go hand in hand. It's a better day for the defense than I think people realize. Like, you can choose to focus on Aiden O'Connell throwing for 299 yards if you want. And I think a lot of people will because a lot of people hate Gus Bradley. But it took him 47 attempts to get there. And for the most part, bending but not breaking, you know, allowed them to walk out of here with the win.
Yeah, the longest pass play on the day was 24, and the longest run of the day for the Raiders was 9. So it's pretty good for a defense, a secondary especially, that has these new pieces, and that matters in both of those because the run fits. Kenny Moore has been a very important piece in the run defense at nickel. It's a part of the game I don't think he gets enough credit for overall. It's hard to just throw in some other guys that's not even done that before. So, yeah, they held this down. I mean, certainly you've got to take it in context. It's Aiden O'Connell, so he's not an explosive quarterback. I think he went the final three quarters last week without completing a pass against the Chiefs, but you know they were able to run it and win. But still, I mean, both sides had this huge youth issue and backups and guys not usually in spots, and the Colts were the ones that came out on top.
Brings us to game day observation. What's your game day observation from today?
Jeez.
I think, and this has been a consistent thing, But Tony Walker, if you want to know more about Tony, you can find Greg Doyle's column from last week on him. His national anthem with the trumpet. Like, national anthems. It's been a good run of national anthems this year at Lucas Oil. Really good run.
Yeah, that's a good one. The national anthem was very, very on point. I don't know that I have any jumping out this week, actually. Part of it's like I got back. I didn't get here as early as I have in the past because I went and visited, had my own sort of delayed Christmas in Chicago and got back today. So I was not quite as on the ball finding those today. So I don't know. I don't know that anything's jumping out at me.
That brings us to three football things that gave me joy. Number one, Amir Speed had three very good reps at Gunner. Long time listeners of the podcast know that I probably like the Gunner Vice relationship more and watch it more than probably, I would say, more than just about any other NFL writer. And unfortunately, Ashton Doolin is not here this year, so I've lost a great friend in terms of watching the Gunner relationship. But Amir Speed is a guy who's had some big mistakes on special teams, and today he had two reps to force a fair catch, and on the third one, he got down there and split he split two blockers and forced a tackle for essentially no yards returning. I love Gunner play. Fun to see a young player play well. Anytime a Gunner has a big game, I'm all in.
Yeah, that was impressive. Especially a guy that hasn't, you know, he's a rookie. He's got cut from one team, arrived on this one. Like, took a lot to get him caught up to speed in that way, and they needed it. Needed to settle special teams down. I'm going to go with one that sort of makes up for my last one and answers this too. So Michael Pittman had a couple moments today. One of them I'm going to make that game day observation now that I think about it. So he had his 100th catch of the season, something that only select Colts receivers have done, like, you know, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark. So he's sort of in that group, and it's interesting that, you know, one of his, you know, his coaches, Reggie Wayne, who's one of those guys, and he said, like, when he got that pass, Reggie didn't say anything about it. They almost didn't quite notice. Not that they didn't necessarily notice. They didn't make a big deal of it in the moment. Then he just kind of kept on playing. And then I asked him after the game, you know, are you going to do anything with the football from it? He was like, I hadn't even thought about that, but now that you say it, it was like this light bulb went off. He was like ready to go hunt for that football. Pittman is very it's just an interesting ride for a guy who, you know, the journey we've been on with him where, you know, the one game he was talking to me about not getting enough targets that day, and here he is almost forgetting that he had 100th catch on the season and what to do with the ball. That just kind of shows how much this thing has worked out for him and how commonplace these catches have become. It's not about if he gets the targets and the catches. It's just when and how and where and all that. And then so the football thing that gave me joy in a combination of that would be when he recovered that fumble that
this is a good one.
Max Crosby punched out from Jonathan Taylor. Just very headsy. Like, he was just like, it's almost like he has a spidey sense. The ball's out. He's got to, like, wrestle through people and dive and pounce on it. It's different the way that it worked, but it was the same sort of instincts that got him that fumble in Baltimore, and I don't think they win that game if he doesn't chase that ball down and get it. And you had said this, so I'm kind of parroting it from you, but it's true that, like, we hear all the time that, and maybe I'll let you make this case since you came up with it, but the idea that sort of like fumbles are 50-50 propositions, but sometimes there is a little bit of skill that goes into that.
The ball bouncing is chance, and I think that analytically that holds up. But in terms of recovering fumbles, it's kind of like fight. It's kind of like who's going to win a fight. It's about who's craziest and who's the most relentless. And so Pitt recovering that fumble and coming flying into the middle of essentially in the middle of the line of scrimmage and coming away with that fumble, that's like, to me, it's an example of who he is. Like, that's, recovering fumbles is about being relentless. That's who Pitt is, being tough. Like, it just embodies him as a player.
Yeah, and it was interesting, just interesting day for him coming back after missing last week and the weirdness that was of getting symptoms late in the week, sitting out. And then, you know, today was not the normal day he normally has of, you know, the big the biggest stat line. He had 5 catches for 46 yards, but 2 just very headsy, good football plays. That one in the defensive pass interference call that he forced in that game. So it's like kind of hidden stats, and it's sort of like for a guy that we talk a lot about the production, the stats, and what's it mean. It was cool to see his comeback manifest, you know, help them get a win in some ways that don't show up in the stat sheet very much.
Number two football thing that gave me joy. I enjoyed jump cuts or hard cuts. I think every football fan does. Jonathan Taylor had a couple today. There was one that I thought was a bad idea, and it wasn't. It was on the screen. It was on the pass he caught. And I thought that he was cutting back to the inside. And he should have stayed to the outside. And he got more yards cutting back to the inside. So maybe not all these were jump cuts, but some of the cuts in general and the sudden changes of direction from him today I thought were really good.
Yeah, one of his better games. I mean, it's crazy. He hasn't had a 100-yard game yet this season, but he came really close today, 96 yards, 4.6 a carry, which, you know, isn't absolutely incredible for the standard that they've been on with the stacked boxes. That's a pretty solid day against the Raiders defense that, you know, that I know they give up a little bit on the ground, but they've, you know, they kind of, if they're like anybody else, was game planning for that as well. My football thing that gave me joy is just the fact that you know, you do these interviews and sometimes you get a lot of compliments and you're reading through it, but like both of these safeties brought the same point up, so that's how I know that it has been a thing for them. But like a long time throughout this season, you know, Ronnie Harrison's been playing linebacker. He's not been in the safety room really at all since training camp, and as he's gotten to talk to Nick Cross, Nick has been telling him throughout the year that like he used to watch him a lot at Alabama and wanted to model his game after some of the ferocious hits that Ronnie would lay at Alabama, and then watching him early in the league with the Jaguars and the Browns. And he didn't quite understand why Ronnie would just suddenly not, you know, didn't have value as a strong safety anymore, and kind of wondered why that went away. And then all of a sudden this week, you know, Julian Blackman goes on injured reserve. We all kind of assumed, all right, Nick Cross, you're the strong safety. That's where they drafted you. And they decided to keep him at free safety because they liked the idea of moving Ronnie Harrison in there and having the experience at strong safety. And the excitement that Nick had of both, you know, he could play free safety, he feels good at that, and then realizing what this was going to be, that Ronnie Harrison was the guy to bring back there. And they just kind of had fun with talking through their journeys of, like, you know, we both talked about the weird ways this worked out, where one of them, the league kind of moved on from Ronnie as a strong safety. On the other hand, like, the Colts hadn't caught up to Nick Cross as a player in this defense, and now they're both those two guys out there in a chaotic situation with everything going on in that secondary, and held their own today. So just kind of a cool moment of showing, you know, teammates who talk through their perseverance kind of build each other up in those moments of not seeing results, and then today they got to see some of the results.
My number three football thing that gave me joy is Trey Sermon's long run, but not the whole run. Specifically, there were two plays today, so it's actually two runs, where from where we were sitting in the press box, it did not look like there was a hole. And he kind of did the Santa Claus thing where his body turns into jello and just kind of right through the hole. And I love it when running backs do that. I love when you don't think that there's anything there and they just they pop through the hole. So, shout out to Trey Sermon for turning into jello.
Yeah, I'll just double up on that one because I actually went over to Trey after the game and brought that play up. And I said the same thing. Like, I didn't see any hole there, and you just, like, blew one open. And he said that was one of those plays that really reminded him of the Ohio State days. They would run a ton of outside zone at Ohio State, get him on the perimeter, and it just hasn't really been the plays he's run here as much. And it was, like, just a kind of cool moment where you had both that play working that way and here in Lucas Oil Stadium, which is where he had his biggest performance to put him on the map against Northwestern in the Big Ten title game. So it was just like, you know, another guy that's had to persevere and wondered if his time would come. And that was a play that, like, your moment's here, what are you going to do? And he just made it happen.
That brings us to the more serious football ones. It's the Colts win today, so too much credit, too little credit. Let's start with too little credit. We'll go with too little credit today.
I got one.
Who gets too little credit for today's win?
Gus Bradley. I know this will be very popular with everybody, but I'm honestly, it is Gus Bradley today because he did not have the best day as anyone did, or nobody did against Atlanta A lot of fans wanted to blitz more. That's been a constant thing. He came out and he blitzed early. Didn't necessarily work, but mostly because he got Aiden O'Connell to dump the ball off, and the Colts early on were not tackling very well. And it just, to me, was a moment of sort of understanding there are limitations here that he's trying to work around, and he can do some things better. But it really, today, I thought, brought out at times the personnel limitations. But also, I think he doesn't get enough credit, because I actually think his plan for the secondary was really sharp. I didn't quite know that it was going to come. You know, I assumed when the week started that Nick Cross would be the strong safety. Roddy Thomas, who they haven't really moved out at all, would be the free safety. And they'd just kind of plug and go that way. They didn't know until Friday morning that Kenny Moore was going to have an injury, or that he was dealing with a little bit of back pain, but that it was going to keep him out, that it was a serious deal. And so at that point, all of a sudden, you've got no experience in that secondary. But what they did early in the week on Wednesday was decide, we want to put Ronnie Harrison at strong safety. And that was mostly about he's played that position. He's the guy who has a lot of experience. If you're going to, they can't replace all the things they lost Julian Blackman. That's the closest version to them of that prototype. You think Rodney McLeod, a lot of experience, vocal guy. They found a better fit, they thought, for their defense. Some of the reasons that they kept Nick Cross off the field is just that specific fit to them isn't as good as some others for him. And yet they didn't just use that as an excuse not to play Nick. They put him at free safety, started him there. I thought that was a switch that's probably been a little overdue. And it's worked out really well. It was relative to what they were up against today. I thought the communication was pretty strong there. And like we said, they did not give up explosive plays. Longest pass was 24. Longest run was 9. And so it just was a way to sort of reward. It was a good way to reward guys for kind of the perseverance they've had, some of the plays that they've made. Doing it on a week where we've seen them botch this situation before, like they did with when they started Tony Brown. This to me was sort of the other end of that, where they came up with a cool plan that I didn't entirely see coming, but watching it play out there, I understand why this is kind of their new safety package. And I think it makes sense going forward too, where if this pans out and if Nick continues to play well as a free safety, they have the option to re-sign one or both of Julian and Ronnie Harrison at strong safety. And the pieces all just kind of fit today, even though they were hamstrung and by some injuries and some weird situations. So I actually thought Gus handled the chaos of this week pretty well.
Too little credit for me is going to be partially today and partially just overall this season. Tyquan Lewis had his fourth sack of the season today. He's part of the line that has broken the record for most sacks by a Colts team in the Indianapolis era. But I don't think people really realize how important he's been. In terms of pressures, according to Sports Info Solutions, I think he was like third or something. And he's only played like 400 snaps after today. It'll be around 400 snaps for the whole season. Tyquan Lewis has been a critical piece to this pass rush group, and a player that they can really count on in a way that I don't know if people realize you could coming off of the patellar tendon injury. And I think that, you know, he had another sack today. The Raiders decided to try to block him with a tight end. That was a very bad decision. but, again, another guy, kind of like Buchter, like that these other guys are hitting career highs in sacks, and we talked a lot about them over the course of the season. But Tyquan Lewis is having a very good season as a rotational defensive lineman. And the Colts, frankly, should, and I think probably will, re-sign him.
Yeah, I got to write about Tyquan's kind of comeback season a few weeks ago. It was really interesting. They were like, I wanted to wait long enough to let him have some of that, let it play out. It was like, I joke with him that it's like, just get through Halloween, please, this year, after that was kind of the timing of the two patellar tendon injuries. And to him, that was kind of a hurdle, too. Once he got through wondering kind of when the next blow is going to hit, he just really has started to play with just a ton of confidence in it. It's a cool story to think, and credit to Chris Ballard, too, for seeing that, because when they decided to sign him back, you know, coming off those two injuries, when we really thought, you know, they should go harder after that edge position, they still kind of did with Samson Ebukam, but they saw something in Tyquan that really was going to have a role here, and the way he's played inside and out, and especially when Grover Stewart was out. He deserves some flowers. We don't bring him up a lot on this, and that's kind of the Tyquan story. He's like sort of the glue guy in the background of everything, but he's He's doing really, really well.
Who's getting too much credit for this win? Or this game in general? I'm going to go Davante Adams. I like, the stat line is eye-popping. 13 catches for 126 yards and two touchdowns. Did it feel like a 13-catch, two-touchdown game?
No.
In the moment? No. Not really.
There's one... And one play of his that really was impressive to me was the touchdown.
The last one?
Yeah, fourth and one. We somehow
that was a really nice catch.
Ball.
But he also had some like drops. Some contested catches he should have made. You know, like Chris LeMond's kind of got credit for a PBU, I think, on a play early there that really felt like Adams should have just had it. There was another one over the middle. Like, I love Davante Adams. I love watching him play football. I love his release, his unique release. I've seen better games from him, and the stat line to me does not match like what the impact on the game was.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm going to marry mine to that and go with Colts cornerbacks because, like I said, I loved how their safety tandem, how they held things together. The cornerbacks, I mean, they survived, but that was part of it. I don't know that they got the best version of Davante Adams. Some of the drops he had, helped situationally. It helped get them off the field at times. And also,
plus there's the Aiden O'Connell piece, right?
The Aiden O'Connell piece, and the Raiders game plan was kind of strange to me at times. This is very minute, but there's like one situation where they were on in plus territory. It's 2nd and 11, and you were pointing out that Davante Adams was one-on-1 with Jalen Jones in press coverage, and they ran up the middle to make it 3rd and 10 for Aiden O'Connell. Like, that is not a way to take advantage of your best player or to set up your young quarterback for any success. That's just kind of where the Raiders are with an interim offensive coordinator and a young backup quarterback. I just don't – you got to – Colts secondary survived, and that's great. And there's guys who stepped up within that. I think the Colts cornerbacks mostly had it a little easy today. Not easy in the sense that, like, they had to come up with, like – make it up for Kenny Moore, but in terms of those outside guys on the perimeter, you know, we've seen them exposed in other games. Today could have been that. I just don't think the Raiders took advantage of it.
This is a bonus football thing that gave me joy, or football thing that made me chuckle. I don't know. Football thing that amused me, made me chuckle. The Raiders trick play.
Yeah.
It's a bonus. It's both. It's football thing that made me chuckle and football thing that gave me joy, because I think I've made it clear on this podcast to longtime listeners, I love defensive football. One of the things I liked about that was that how good the coverage was.
Yeah.
Once the ball went back to Aiden O'Connell, because he was supposed to go deep with it, it was not there. He had to throw it back and throw an incomplete pass. The football thing that made me chuckle was just like, it was a lot of work. They did a lot of work to get an incomplete pass. The ball flew a lot of air yards. Like, we always talk about, like, how long a running back ran. Like, that was always a big thing with Barry Sanders. Like, he ran 40 yards to get 4. Like, the air yards on that play for the football to have an incomplete pass, hilarious. Like, 120 air yards or something like that to essentially get an incomplete pass.
It felt like it lasted, like, 12 seconds.
It did. I think it's still going on.
Which has to be one of the longest plays that's ever been run to gain 0 yards. Usually long plays are either great or terrible. Like, one way or another, the ball's moving somewhere. So for the line of scrimmage to be exactly what it was the snap before that, it's just kind of funny.
That brings us to the last two categories. Something to throw away from this game and something to go on. One take that people are talking about right now that it just throw it away.
I think we did this last. I don't know if we did this again. That podcast didn't exist last week because I was driving and I was focused on my driving.
Shout out to the listener who really appreciated that we did that, though. I got a chance to somebody in front of me in the line to get on the plane said that they listened to it while you're waiting for a delayed plane, and it made me feel really good. That some of you appreciated that we rushed out that pod.
The irony of that was I didn't fly out to the next day anyway, so I was just a rush.
But you got me home.
I did,
to my children,
and Joel's kids got to have Christmas. So that was a successful drive in a podcast. Anyway, I'm sure we've done this one before, but if it hasn't already been officially killed, dead, and buried, stop talking. Please, let's stop talking about replacing Braden Smith with Blake Freeland for next season. At some point, there will be in the future conversation about Braden Smith. If these injuries continue, it will not happen, I don't think, this offseason. If it were to, the only way it could is if there's a completely other situation, maybe a first-round player that falls in their lap. But the idea that, like, you can move from Braden Smith to Blake Freeland and not feel that drop-off, that should be dead and buried. And just the last 2 weeks, I think, sum that up a ton, where a healthy and fresh Blake Freeland goes up against Calais Campbell and gets totally worked and the game's wrecked. A very banged up Braden Smith goes up against Max Crosby, who, I love Calais Campbell, but Max Crosby's better than he is. And you did not notice that impact really anywhere near the same way. And that's the thing about Braden Smith. At just the end of the day, he's not only an offensive lineman, he's a very quiet guy. He's in that range of, like, he's so solid you forget about him when he's out there and he's doing it, and you notice him when he's not out there. And so, you just can't take for granted solid play at right tackle. And I know you've brought this up, like, they don't need to save money. So it's like, if they were in that spot, I think it'd be a bad idea. That, like, find another way to save money, but they aren't. They don't need to save money. Not really. I mean, Michael Pittman will cost them a ton of money, which they have, because they have a rookie and a quarterback on a rookie deal. So, please move off that forever.
He's not preventing them from doing anything. The financial argument, they're like, well, he could save some money. For what?
Yeah, that would be like the argument of, like, let Michael Pittman go. He could save some money. For what? And what's that look like if you do? Like, we could save money and go win two games if that's the goal. I don't think that's the goal, though.
Thing to throw away from this particular game. I'm trying to think. It's kind of a game where a lot of stuff kind of went the way you expect it to. A take to throw away from this game. We'll just go with this. The idea that you should always force feed the run over and over again. Like, you can't. Okay. This is a hard argument to make because people are like, well, you got to make sure Jonathan Taylor gets his carries. I agree with that. I think Jonathan Taylor should get his carries. I think that there's, especially with Gardner Minshew there, there's definitely a reason for the running game. But, like, freaking out about lack of carries after the third drive when they threw twice on first down and were incomplete. Like, you have to throw on first down. You have to. You can't run on first down all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not good. And if you throw incomplete on first down, which is going to happen sometimes, it's bad to then run on second and long. Everyone knows. Just about everybody knows that.
Well, the Raiders offense coordinator did not know that.
That's a good joke. And also kind of not a joke. Like, I know people don't like those explanations from coaches. Like, when you ask about lack of carries over a stretch or something like that, and they're like, you know, essentially the game situation didn't call for it. It's also true. It's also true to some degree. Jonathan Taylor ended up with 21 carries in this game. Could they have given him maybe one or something somewhere else in there? Okay, but, like, some of it is predicated on what's going on. And they did stick with the run. He had 21 carries. I don't think they ran it quite 30 times.
29 total.
29, so close. That's a lot.
And two of those were Minshew, but yeah.
That's a lot. To some degree, we need to move forward and try to understand, like, some of these things about offensive football. If you throw too much, if you run too much on second and long, it's bad. That's not, like, that's just math.
Yeah, it's some of the old school idea of establish the run that has.
And I'm not saying they don't need to run. They need to run. Gardner Minshew cannot and should not. Like, one of the best things about this game and the Pittsburgh game is that he didn't throw the ball too much because he didn't have to. And so there was, like, he made his plays early. They didn't give him a chance to ruin them by making a mistake. Like, they do need to run the ball. I just think freaking out over it when the game's not finished yet is the wrong play.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. It's just the idea that you can just manufacture something that the defense is designed to take away. That happens a lot. So I trust Shane Steichen with a lot of this stuff. He's been a masterful play caller his whole career and has mostly done that this year. So there will be some things to nitpick, but in general, over the course of the season, if things pop up consistently like that, there's usually a good reason, even if it's a boring reason.
That leaves us with one to go on, and mine is a little bit hot. Mine is a little bit hot this time. I think the Colts' biggest need in the offseason is in the secondary. I don't know if I have the pulse on that. But I know you've got two rookie corners. They have, at the very least, you know, been playable there. They're 9-7 with them. There's still some question marks. You've got Julian Blackman is headed into a contract year, or is headed into free agency, I mean. You've got Kenny Moore in a contract situation. Rodney Thomas, the team has decided, was not playable today in a must-win situation. You're going to need to keep adding. You know, I know Dallas Flowers comes back next year. He's also coming off of an Achilles tendon. And we've seen in the past with other players, that's very difficult, especially in explosive positions. I'm not saying he can't do it or that he won't be, but he might not be quite the same athlete that he's been in the past, at least for the first year after it. I still think that there's probably some stuff to be added in the secondary in one way or the other to shore it up going into next season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they don't have that many like glaring positional, like they got to go get this one position. The one I will throw in there is tight end, maybe. We'll see if Jelani Woods can get over his injuries, but that room is thinning out for various reasons. My take to go on to kind of beat the horse again, but it's a different one. It's a different variation of it, is that I think Nick Cross is a free safety only now. Maybe not in terms of he can't do something. I think they see him as a free safety long term. I think they came to that conclusion. This has been, today kind of showed me in some kind of other conversations with him and other people of why this has been the struggle that we've had, where, you know, you and I have sat here and said they should play him more, and they're sort of like a little bit hesitant, and yet they like the work he does behind the scenes. I just think to them, at least in this scheme, the fit for him is a lot better at free safety than strong, where strong safety is so much about communication. And he's gotten better there, but it's not quite like some of the experienced guys they can go out and get who've done it for many years and have seen so much football. They don't want to kind of build that up yet. That's not really the path at that position. But more so than that, I think his skill set actually really does fit well at free safety, where he is so explosive or so fast and long-range speed to cover that kind of ground as a single high safety. He's got those ball skills we saw against Pittsburgh to sort of like come from depth and go up over a guy. And that just recovery speed to come from depth we saw against the Buccaneers, that's the play that got him on the field that really jumped out to them when he came from depth to make a tackle on third down short of the sticks. And it's like that mixture where he is fast enough to chase down a play that breaks out into the open field at an angle, but also to come from depth like that and still kind of make impact plays. It's very difficult. You have to have just a really incredible athlete to be able to do all that and feel the impact. And that's where I think they were just kind of missing that from Rodney Thomas, who Rodney's a very good tackler, and he's had moments where he has been, when he is in coverage, he can sometimes, you know, he can pick off a pass, but he doesn't, very few guys have that total package of the long range speed that Nick does. And the one issue that, or the dilemma that they had with him at free safety last year was just that because you play so far off the ball, you have to really be dialed in and focused because a lot of plays you're not involved in, then you are. And that's where he's turned the corner, is he's really, really in a great headspace, dialed in, studying a lot more. He understands the defense better by cross-training at those three different positions. So it's one of those where it's nice that he can play more than one. But I think going forward, I think we're going to see him next week start free safety. And then going forward, he's going to be the starting free safety next year. And it opens up a possibility to just possibly just re-sign Julian Blackman, who's been a great fit at strong safety. It took him a long time to figure out this puzzle here of kind of where all these pieces fit. I think they may have found it out right now.
That's the Colts Cover 2 Podcast, First Impressions Edition, from the Colts' win over the Las Vegas Raiders. They now face a difficult test against C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans, who, like the Colts, have been much better, I think, than anyone expected this season. Both teams going for a playoff spot, a somewhat unlikely playoff spot. Big game. Big game next weekend. Big game to finish the season. For the Colts Cover 2 Podcast, I am Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.